Track 7, London Landmarks. This month, we have a really unusual approach to London landmarks, as Siobhan Davis looks at tower cranes.
Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner that I love London so.
My name is Siobhan Davis, and I'm a choreographer. I enjoy the walk along the Regent's Canal. I enter the towpath at Camden Town and think my thoughts as I go towards King's Cross. As I turn a bend, I raise my eyes because I know that I will see the top half of a group of tower cranes, which are being used to raise a new building. There are five of them, painted different colours, dark green and red, denoting the different construction companies they belong to. These cranes are at least 330 foot high and stand free of the buildings they are working on. I leave the canal and walk down King's Boulevard towards King's Cross Station. I have to tilt my head further and further back in order to keep seeing the tops of the cranes. They look like a collection of boat masts in a harbour. They also share with boats a structure of rigging. Cables make diagonal lines between the ends of mast and jib to connect them. Cables, which instead of helping to harness the wind in the sails, are used to manipulate the heft of building materials and manoeuvre them with considered delicacy to a precise place on the building site. The mast, unlike the solidity of the mast of a boat, is an open latticed column, a structure of steel struts, welded in zigzag triangles. The triangle is the strongest shape in engineering, so despite its skeletal appearance, the mast is sturdy as well as flexible enough to deal with the tension and weight it has to deal with. All the way up inside the mast are horizontal mesh platforms at regular intervals, with a connecting ladder for people to climb or descend. The size of the ladder seems deceptively small against the hugeness of this machine. On top of this part of the mast is a solid disc like a turntable, the slewing rig, which enables the entire upper section of the crane to swivel round 360 degrees in either direction. This upper section is the working arm, called the jib, which can be raised and lowered by the cables and turned by the disc, giving it a range of moves, including beautiful arcs, as the heavy materials both rise up and travel along to the exact places they are needed in. These arcs are both graceful and efficient, and are one of the main reasons I'm glued to watching this manoeuvre. I am feeling the move with them. The jib is latticed, like the mast. It can lower from its more stable position close to the mast and hover horizontally over the ground. Its furthest tip seems outrageously distant from its centre of balance, the main mast. From this tip is the U-shaped hook from which the load can be suspended. The two other parts of the crane above the slewing rig, the disc, are the A-frame, or machinery arm, whose wedge shape houses the motors. Beneath that is the counter-jib, a horizontal platform which holds the ballast, a counterweight stopping the crane from tipping over. This ballast is often a group of bound grey concrete slabs, looking a bit like immense stacked books. To one side, and at the top of the main mast, level with the slewing rig, is a small cabin, and here sits the person who operates the accurate navigations. His knees almost shoved up against the tinted, sloping pane of glass, with his hands on the joysticks. He takes time to wave towards me, because I've been watching him for some time. He seems tiny, as if I could place him on the palm of my hand. There are some diagrams of cranes dating from ancient Greece. They were made from wood, and to my mind, their structure began as amplification of the movements our bodies do when we lift something heavy. I'm amazed that from two small contacts with the earth, the ball and heel of my foot, I have at my disposal a huge range of actions where each part of my body orchestrates itself to deal with the movements that I do every minute without thinking. I can walk, run, reach for something above my head, or pick something up from the floor. Despite its colossal scale, a crane has been engineered to undertake, like us, a sequence of adjustments in order to maintain its fragile equilibrium of opposing forces: weight, gravity, height, distance. When I reach forward to pick up a child, for example, I bend my knees, take my hips back, bringing my weight closer to the ground. This compensates for the trunk of my body being further forward than my normal weight distribution could tolerate, and stops me toppling while I adjust to taking on the weight of the child. I have to then readjust, moment by moment, as I stand straight with the child clasped to me. The tower crane's base is not free. Instead, it is bolted down into a concrete pad for extra stability. Above, depending on the weight of the load and the distance it has to travel, all sorts of adjustments need to be made. The distance between the load on the ground and using the crane in its most stable position needs to be finely tuned. The angles between the jib and the mast have to be precise. With the load close to the mast, where the crane is most stable, the cranes at King's Cross can carry a cargo equivalent to about 6 cars, almost 300 times heavier than can be lifted by any one of us. Once the hook is coaxed down from the sky to connect with the load, slowly, smoothly, the jib simultaneously rises and rotates. The load at the bottom of a long almighty chain takes off, swinging up and round in a diagonal arc, dragging slightly as if through water. This unimaginable weight now seems to float, weightless, buoyed up by the viscous air. When it's eventually been lowered to the exact target, with heart-stopping accuracy, the hook is released and the chain swings hypnotically from side to side like a pendulum, each swing setting off a compensatory ripple in the opposite direction higher up. Sometimes the whole crane sways, its flexible framework allowing it to bend without shattering. The delicate movements necessary to manoeuvre the hook are choreographed by the aerial operator and his earthbound banksman with hand signals and radio. In order to carry out a single task safely, particularly when the drag of the air pulls on the load as it moves more horizontally than vertically, the two men must allow for this delayed effect. They have to think about the whole trajectory of the action they are about to undertake. It is not so different for a dancer or an athlete who need to think of the consequences that each part of their movement has on the next, and then the next, and so on until the end of a phrase is reached. There is a strange contrary energy. The thrust of everything the crane does is ultimately directed upwards. They need to raise and position every single item needed in the construction of a building as it inches its way up from its foundations. Girders, concrete, piping, wires, sheets of glass are all seen dangling in the air on their way up. But at the same time, all the power of each crane is focused downward to a single point, the hook and the loads. When we see the height of a dancer's jump, we forget how much they have had to use the ground they spring from. Surprisingly, apart from the occasional metallic clunk and low-pitched whir, the cranes work in silence. There is a real sense of necessary calm and attention. I watch cranes at work with my dancers and choreographer's eye. Something about the enormous moves undertaken by them make me feel something quite deep in my own body. The loads on the cranes dip and arc, rotating both left and right, and the distances between them contract and expand. It can feel like the transformation of a stage when huge scenery is moved, or entering an enormous art installation. Cranes are the first structures that warn us about the arrival of a new building, but they have also been used outside their normal role and become part of a wider story. I remember as a young woman standing on the banks of the Thames, watching Winston Churchill's body being carried on a launch. As the launch passed Hayes Wharf, each crane dipped. It was a massive and a tender gesture. And at Christmas time, I can look up and see fairy lights arranged on their tops, occasionally next to an isolated Christmas tree. There feels as if there is a particular relationship between these engineered beauties and the people who work them. I can go a long time without noticing cranes, and then I do, and I can't help but be drawn to the very edge of where they are at work, and experience again that slight physical shift as I watch how they move.
Thank you, Siobhan.